Welcome to the Annex Wealth Management SWAT podcast. It's episode 94, Monday, March 11th, 2024. Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. It's insight and perspective from members of the Annex Wealth Management Investment Committee. Joining us, Matt Morsey, Investment Team Manager. Welcome.
Hey, Danny.
And we got Dr. Todd Voigt, Chief Investment Strategist. Hello, Todd.
Hi, Danny.
Just wanted to thank everybody for listening to the podcast. Please feel free to share, send out to others. We really enjoy doing these, and we hope that you enjoy listening to them as well. With that, Todd, why don't you kick us off with what's going to happen this week?
From an economic standpoint, we got Tuesday CPI expected to come in about 3.1% annualized, ex food and energy about 3.8. It's going to be a pretty interesting indicator to keep an eye on because of what we've seen recently in January and what we're seeing in the jobs data. Average hourly earnings are coming out. We'll talk a little bit about that as we proceed. Thursday, we got PPI, retail sales, and jobless claims. And Friday, Michigan sentiment indicators, which, again, we're going to talk about down below. If I might roll on here with strengths, what we're seeing for strengths, obviously U.S. economy, and thinking out of the box, is that growth might actually reaccelerate. Job gains, non-farm payrolls produced a positive surprise last week, 223 versus 175,000, average hourly earnings off a bit, but still over 4%. These are things that are delaying the Fed rate cuts that were anticipated starting in March. So as we proceed through the year, these are potential rate cuts are seemingly coming off the table. Trend is positive for real disposable incomes as inflation's eased and incomes are rising. Doesn't mean prices are coming down. They're not. And people are still feeling that. And that ties in with consumer sentiment and consumer confidence that we've got coming up this week. Unemployment. You hear this common unemployment average at a 50-year low. 2023's average was 3.64%. 2019 was 3.67%, just a smidgen higher, but also very low relative to the last 50 years. But the difference was in April 2020, we lost almost 16 million jobs because of the pandemic. Took the rest of the year to get some of those back. 2021 was largely people coming back to work. Biden got into office in January of 21. So it was more the return of people to the labor force that really created the jobs. I don't want to be partisan, but I want to point that out, that the truth of the matter is you got a lot of people coming back into the labor force. You can't take credit for all these job creations after something as bad as we've seen in 2020. So the last 2 months, unemployment's coming in at 3.739 recently, seasonally adjusted low, a good thing. And much of that job growth in probably about the last 6 months has been government, local, state employment.
I think that's added to the strength of the market so far this year. We're coming off a year where the stock market, especially, you know, thinking the Magnificent Seven and those large cap growth or mega cap names really led the market up. We've had a continuation this year from an S&P perspective. We're up over 8% year to date. Tech and comm, again, are leaders within that and outpacing the S&P. But one thing that has been different is that this has kind of been an equal opportunity market. Pretty much every sector has been positive for the year, real estate being the only one that is negative at the time that we're recording this, and 8 of the 11 sectors are up over 5%. So we're going to broad participation throughout the entire market, and it's just very different than what we saw last year. So market's up, but now we have participation, which I think is a really promising sign for future returns and where you could go to get returns within the market. The equal weight S&P, which we've talked a lot about over the course of making these podcast episodes, just set a new all-time high. It was almost 550 days since the last time they hit an all-time high in the equal weight. That was the beginning of January 22 when the market started to sell off and we had that big down year. That's somewhat amazing because we've talked just so much about how there's only been 7 companies or 10 companies that have led everything. But now we're getting to a spot where the average company is participating as well. In fact, from a relative standpoint, if you compare the Magnificent 7 versus the rest of the S&P, it's actually flat since third quarter of last year. So those market gains that we're getting are coming across the board, which is, I think, is a really promising sign. And something, Todd, you've talked about the equal weight versus market cap weight really since you came on board on Annex a few years ago. This is a conversation we've continually had, and we're finally now starting to see that participation. And I think there's some pretty good things that could come from that.
Right. And it's also a function of the underlying earnings growth that we saw change. Well, right at the end of the third quarter, rolling into the fourth quarter, corporate profits were turning up. And they're turning up, you know, as a result of improving productivity. That's also helping keep inflation down from, you know, an already high price level. You want to go on to weaknesses?
One thing we've been talking about is the dollar.
So my only comment on the dollar is there's certainly been dollar strength relative to the yen and euro, but not necessarily to Bitcoin and gold. And Bitcoin and gold are quasi-currencies, and not even quasi-currency. They're construed as currencies in and of themselves. So the dollar's actually been weaker. We'll talk more about the Bitcoin in a bit, but adding to the weakness scenario, you know, there's not much to say in the area of weaknesses, you know, given how the economy's doing, the markets are doing, and so forth. But ISM came in at 47.8 versus an expected 49. That's a good enough difference. Michigan consumer sentiment a couple weeks ago, 76.9 versus an expected 79.6. And construction spending down 20%, it was expected to be positive 15%. So you start looking at the surprises, the preponderance of positive surprises or negative surprises start telling you whether economists are overestimating or underestimating where the economy's going or what they've been expecting. You can look at a couple of different surprise indices. Citi has one of them. Bloomberg, I believe, has one of them. For this sort of directional trend in economists' forecasts for these numbers. And so if there's a weakness, it's probably in manufacturing under the surface. The impact of dollar weakness down the road would have implications for international, especially emerging markets.
Yeah, I think that's an area that over the last couple of years, when we talk to fund managers, especially those that concentrate what they're doing overseas, is, well, our process is sound, the companies we're picking are sound, but the dollar's been a fight against us, and that's really hampered performance. Just wait until that trend reverses and the dollar starts to pull back. Not only are you going to get good company selection from our process, but you're also going to get an above average return because of the currency effect through it. And I think the hope for a lot of those managers and the people that we're talking to there is that maybe we're at the beginning of that cycle change, and maybe that the dollar strength is not increasing anymore, but even if it's just flat or volatile in a certain range, and then the benefit would be that if the dollar started to pull back a little bit, that you'd really would get a tailwind that would be pushing the international emerging markets up. Emerging markets, a little bit more exposure to that than the developed markets, but the same idea there. And that's something that's been email after email after email I've been coming into is, have you seen what's been going on here? Look at the performance and how that's starting to change. So that's an area that we're watching for. The weakness being the dollar, as you're saying, potential strength in other areas there. You know, the other thing we're seeing too, just even in the last month with how good the S&P has, the international markets have actually outpaced over that time period too. So you are seeing the continuation there from a standpoint of that allocation to the international, which had been a drag on overall portfolio performance during certain time periods, especially since the financial crisis, actually has started to really help in diversifications, proving to be, you know, an area that helps out overall portfolio return.
See how we think on the same page. It's exactly what I was going to say, is that portfolio construction standpoint, everybody's waiting for the weak dollar ship to come in and predicting it. And the whole point of the structure of the portfolios, and it's not just annex portfolio, it's all over. It's, you know, if you're properly diversified, you've got these areas covered. When they do turn, they're greatly beneficial to the portfolio. AI as an example last year. The other implication for a weaker dollar is going to be beneficial to multinationals. And where do you see that in an economic sense? As you see, China exports surprised greatly to the upside, 7% versus nearly 2% expected in terms of growth. And I call it a China export shock is an indication that the global economy is recovering. You can, you know, see that too in the markets, and markets, of course, being a barometer.
Switching over onto the opportunity side, one of the things or the themes that we've had within our investment committee meetings over the last few weeks is it's been all of the money that has flown into money market fund or even short-term treasuries, both on a global landscape, but also internally here at Annex, that the cash management accounts that we've been working on behalf of our clients that are looking to add, you know, money that was coming into money markets, came out of low interest savings accounts, checking accounts, to get that for now 5%+ yield. Treasuries have been a really great addition to that as well for clients. But for people who are thinking more long-term with that set of money, where they're thinking, okay, I'm getting the higher interest now, I really, really appreciate that, but long-term, this money is going to be into my portfolio. You know, one thing that we're talking about on that is how do we proactively step forward with that? Rates, as you mentioned earlier in the podcast, is, you know, we were thinking the Fed said 3 cuts, the market said 7, the market's come down to 3. You know, the Fed's even pushing that back a little bit with, hey, you know, maybe we don't necessarily need to start that process right now. They might stay a little bit higher for longer, but proactively, you really want to have a plan to start moving that money out of the money market into more of a traditional fixed income basket where you're able to lock in those higher yields now before they start to come down. And I know that's something you've talked about a lot in the past as well, Todd.
Another opportunity, and we've got it in portfolio and exposure in funds, is gold breaking out. Silver not breaking out as much, but should be. And why is that? It's a function of two interrelated factors. The flight from Bitcoin for someone that participated in the tripling of Bitcoin over the last year, and then also concerns over U.S. debt and deficits. So that's an opportunity, is to look at, and it's in the portfolios. We have positions scattered around in gold and gold-related. But that's the reason why I think that that is breaking out. It's if you got Bitcoin on a big-time rally and people do get concerned, it is a tangible asset. I know the fundamentals are great for Bitcoin. It stole that luster, no pun, from gold all of last year and the year before because all the attention was on Bitcoin. But now gold is getting some benefit from that rally that we've seen in the cryptocurrencies.
I think that's a lot of reflection to the stability of our fiscal situation from a government standpoint. You know, our ability to increase the amount of money that we run into a deficit every single year has been a positive for the U.S. economy overall, but it does start to hit some limits as the percent of that annual budget that has to go pay that debt service down. And I think about a third, a little bit more than that, in terms of what our overall debt load is maturing in the next year or so. We have the higher rates that we have out there from the Fed right now, which is only going to compile on itself there. And so as people get more and more concerned on that, especially if they don't see any action from Washington, that's going to produce, you know, Bitcoin or gold or those types of assets as a way to push those prices higher as people get more and more concerned of the situation that we're in.
Wow, you just rolled right into threats. You know, and that was a question I had in threats is where's the leverage in government bonds? And at the same time, corporate balance sheets are in pretty good shapes. They've lower interest payments, but they got a wall of maturities. I'm sure Blaine and other members on the investment team have talked on SWAT about that. But after they take advantage of these low rates and you combine that with an economic slowdown, you've got obviously an increased probability of defaults to that point. So I might just, you know, roll right on with that Bitcoin comment. I could not know as much about the underlying fundamentals, and I don't, and I admittedly don't on cryptocurrencies as much as somebody like Jason, but been here, done that several times. And this is a time that's most reminiscent of 1998 to me. You know, at that time, and I know Derek will attest to this and Dave, that you've had tech funds that were being introduced all the time. The underlying fundamentals were great, which is true, could do no wrong, and a bright future. And you've seen that in real estate, you've seen it in tech, and there's no problem with tech today and AI, but there's a speculative element creeping into the market. And that really interesting thing about that is, I've always made this comment, Barron's and the Economist had on their covers of their magazines a brick that said housing on it. And it's like, it was like April of 2005 or July of 2005. You know, and so everyone knew that bubble was expanding. You know, I say 98 because when the market was expanding, we had at that time, 1995, 6, and 7 were three great years in the market, best in 60 years. 95, 6, 7, and 8, best 4 years and probably since the Great Depression. 95, 6, 7, and 8, and 9, best 5 years if the market was around 500 years, which it wasn't. The point was you knew at some point that would come to an end. And you get into these, and again, the underlying fundamentals are good. There's all the reason you'd want to own them and so forth, and they've got staying power and so forth. But when you have the introduction of the 9 funds that, you know, again, is reminiscent of the 98 period, you got FOMO, bringing in investors who did not participate in the Bitcoin rally. And then down the road, the next phase would be institutions recommending 5% of the portfolio allocated to crypto. And you've got Bitcoin propelling to 100,000 and maybe 200,000. Now, it will continue even if they banned it or whatever they did, but at some point you're going to get into this bubble situation. And I've seen that in enough times and kind of, you know, seen this movie before. But
Funny you mentioned 1998. So, yeah. I had a friend text me this morning talking about some of the tech stocks that have run up quite a bit recently. And his response was like, this must have been how 1998 felt. And so you start to see some of those things all kind of pile together. Some of the areas that you're witnessing, you have the random person who texts, hey, these things are going really good. This seems crazy, you know, and you kind of add a lot of those things together. And one other thing that we look at here internally is from CNN. It's called the Fear and Greed Indicator. And right now it's a scale of 0 to 100, something that Derek, our CIO, has talked about considerably, you know, through our radio and a lot of presentations that we do. But 76 right now is a score which is classified as extreme greed. Now, the scoring can stay in extreme greed or extreme fear for a little while, but generally they do serve to provide opportunities to make changes within the portfolio. Not perfect timing, but give some insight into short-term tops or bottoms. When the number's really high, probably a great time to DCA into the market and kind of take a measured approach into adding risk within a portfolio. When the number's really low, that's more of a time where you could say, okay, I feel a little bit more comfortable going all in, because the sentiment is so bad that this usually provides an opportunity to add risk within a portfolio. So you try to move on the opposite, right? When everybody's greedy, you actually want to take a little bit of a step off or back off, or just be aware of that's going on. When everyone's afraid, that's usually an area where you can kind of step on the pedal a little bit. So that's one of the things that we watch, and it's been a little bit elevated throughout the course of this year so far. But as the market continues to stretch up, and you know, we started off the podcast with all of the strengths, all the great things that are happening, that's reflected in the market in real time. But those sentiments can get stretched, and it gets stretched to a point where, hey, maybe I don't need to join that party if I'm not already there, or maybe I could take a more measured approach into joining it.
Exactly. You said that a couple of times, the word measured, measured approach. It is incredibly difficult to time these tops in an expanding bubble situation. And, you know, I don't want to say that Bitcoin's in a bubble. I will say it will go into a bubble. And that's what'll propel the Bitcoin higher. Do you have time? Yeah, I think you got a lot of time. I'm not actually concerned about it, because 1996 December, Alan Greenspan coined the phrase irrational exuberance. 96, you know, so 97, 8, 9, the market's still expanding. You know, everyone talking about the bubble, not everyone, but, you know, knowledgeable people in 2005, some even shorted the market, shorted real estate. And the market, real estate market's still going up in 2006 and 2007. This is elapsed over years. If we transpose that on today and say, well, Todd, if you in fact think that's true, that we're rolling into a bubble situation with crypto, then this is a 2025, 2006 story. If Bitcoin goes to 200,000, gets cut in half, it's still 100,000. You know, so you still have, you know, some time. But, you know, I was just talking to someone about Isaac Newton, famous physicist, the whole gravity situation. And I'm laughing because he went into the South Sea Trading Company, British South Sea Trading Company, and he buys into it. He makes a ton of money. And let's say in a crypto sense, it goes 100,000. He gets out, and then it goes up to like 700. And he gets back in, and he loses everything. And he makes some comment, and I've got to look that up, about that and dealing with the markets and bubbles. And he himself, a famous physicist, was bewildered and caught up in the emotion of the market. So I just think the whole thing's interesting. If nothing else, it has entertainment value, because as we watch this unfold, it'll be really interesting.
Headline strength this week?
Strength of the economy and market pushing forward.
Headline weakness?
The U.S. dollar potential.
Headline opportunity?
To slowly and proactively move money into longer dated bonds in order to lock in those yields.
And our headline threat?
This week, beginning of euphoria.
Annex Wealth Management SWAT Podcast. It's episode 94. Dr. Todd Voigt, Chief Investment Strategist. Thanks.
Thanks, Danny.
Matt Morrissey, Investment Team Manager. Thank you.
Thank you.
Annex Wealth Management, LLC, is a registered investment advisor. For more information about our firm, please visit annexwealth.com. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only and is subject to change without notice. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and don't necessarily reflect on those of Annex Wealth Management, LLC. Information presented should not be construed as tax, legal, or investment advice, or a recommendation or a solicitation for the sale of any product or strategy. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from qualified professionals to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Investments involve risk. Neither Annex Wealth Management, LLC, nor its podcast participants shall be liable for losses resulting from decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on this podcast.